I am actor, comedian, gift queen, Danielle Radford.
And I'm writer, director, actor, and all-around horror fan, Megan Rosati.
Welcome to Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast, a Stage 13 original series that is an immersion into the unique worlds created by each episode of the hit anthology series on the CW and Netflix.
In each episode of our podcast, we sit down with the Two Sentence Horror Stories creators, as well as celebrity guests and social activists, to deep dive into the social and cultural issues explored on the cult series
and the carefully intricate craft that went into the making of each episode.
This is Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast.
I'm so glad to finally meet you, Angela. I'm Sam.
Oh, I know. I ought to know everything about you. Can I have my sweet now?
Well, what do we say first?
Pretty please.
Bold move there, Buster.
I like it when you're smaller than me.
Oh yeah, why is that?
Because I like to be the boss.
Hi, I'm writer, actor, director, and haunted doll, Megan Rosati.
And I'm a hater of haunted dolls, but not Megan Rosati, Danielle Radford.
Welcome to Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast. That clip you just heard at the top was of Sam, the babysitter, and their awkward introduction to the creepily fantastic Angela in the season 3 episode, Tea Time. So before we get into Tea Time, Danielle, why don't you spill some tea? How has your week been treating you so far?
Well, I don't want to talk out of turn, but me and Megan had a kiki and we hung out last night and it was super dope.
Yeah, I met Danielle IRL and she destroyed me. So everything you hear is through is through a fading hangover.
I like when liquor tastes like liquor. I don't like when it tastes like candy.
That's where we came from. Her pad CU is still in my fridge.
We're very much in love, and I'm very much a trash human. We did it. So, today we're discussing the episode Tea Time, where a babysitter's latest gig takes a sinister turn when she discovers the controlling little girl has a collection of evil dolls.
Want to see my dolls?
Okay. Oh, these are very artistic.
Hey, you're not supposed to be here. I told you to stay on the shelf.
Hey, hey, easy there. Whoa, easy. Hey, what's going on?
I just hate it when things don't do what they're supposed to.
Okay, well, I wonder if there's a more gentle way to get our message across.
You can check out this full episode on the CW and on the CW app. Today on the pod, we'll be summoning the spirit of Chucky and chatting about a few of our favorite killer kids and demented dolls from the genre of horror. Plus, we'll get the behind-the-scenes juicy details on the season 3 episode, Tea Time.
Actually, I'd rather not summon Chucky into a physical form, but that's just me. Joining our conversation today, we have the Spear Sisters, Sam and Kaylee, who directed the episode.
The Spear Sisters have directed both theater and film, and the 2014 stage version of Hamlet featured the first female Hamlet in Canada.
Sam and Kaylee's most recent short film, Alien Ore, was made with 20th Century Fox and Tongle in celebration of the 40th anniversary of Alien. So these sisters know their horror.
And later on in the show, we'll be joined by Peaches Christ.
Peaches Christ is a drag performer, filmmaker, and part-time cult leader from San Francisco. Her infamous cult movie events are self-produced at the Castro Theater and have drawn the attention of legends like John Waters, Pam Grier, and more.
It's so good. I've seen a bunch of those shows. But first, the Spear Sisters, Sam and Kaylee. Hello, Sam. Hello, Kaylee. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am super psyched to talk about this episode. Creeped me the F out, which is your job. So thank you.
Excellent. Well, we're very happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, so before we get into the fantastic creepiness that is Tea Time, We got to know. Creepy doll or evil child, who would you rather battle and why? I'll start. Definitely an evil child, because you cannot kill a doll, y'all, whereas a child is a mean little human that I am taller than.
That's a very, very good point. Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, same. I feel like, yeah, those dolls, they're going to keep on coming. The kid, I feel like you could get rid of.
Right? You can keep an eye on her. You never know what the doll's going to do. Yeah.
I know. You can, like, see what the kid's thinking a little bit more.
That's true. That's true. Danielle, what about you?
I guess neither if I have a choice, but if I have a choice, I would feel more prepared to crush an evil doll than to good son a child.
No, I'm...
That's very true. You can punch the doll across the room and not really feel bad about it.
Yeah, they are very kickable.
Meanwhile, I'm like, I will murder a child. Just give me... Well, I don't... Also, dolls, even like the ones in Tea Time, they're small. So you can't freaking keep track of them. What if they crawl under the bed or in the walls or some shit? Like, that is... that you can't get at that. A child is confined to human-sized spaces. And you can't take off its head and it still keeps attacking you. Like, that's what happens at Tea Time.
Yeah, I would not want those lurking around my house.
Oh, God. I do love this episode, but yes, I do also have a thing about both creepy dolls and creepy children. Mm-hmm. Those are like some of the horror things that I watch, knowing that those are the ones where I'm like, oh, this is going to get me right where I live.
Oh, yeah.
So we got to talk about Tea Time. Kaylee, how would you describe the episode to someone who hasn't watched it yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this episode follows Sam as she gets a job as a babysitter at a big fancy house. And then once the parents leave, she realizes that the kid isn't just a normal little kid.
Okay. So spoilers from on out. These are for people. If you haven't watched the episode, get the heck out. Watch the episode, come back, and creepy kid.
What are you doing? Why haven't you watched it? It's so good. Don't do that.
And the spoiler is,
big old spoiler is, this creepy kid has been turning her babysitters into dolls. And so our hero Sam has to avoid being kind of witchied by this child and turned into a doll. So she's trapped with this kid and the dolls that now are working for our said evil child.
Like Danielle said, creepy dolls and evil children are two of my horror flashpoints for anxiety. Could not even look at the poster for Chucky when it was the original. The idea of Chucky frightened me so badly. But also, as a former babysitter and current small person, there is a terror to babysitting children. So I'm 5'2", and when I was in high school, I babysat this kid who was... I was 16, he was 11, and he was taller and bigger than me. And it was just the two of us. And he's like, how about we play a game where I tie you up and then I pretend like we're being attacked? And I was like, how about, totally innocent, I was like, how about we play a game where, oh, I was like, okay, that sounds good. How about I tie you up? He was like, yeah, even more fun. But in that moment, it's like,
you forget that it's like, oh, this is a literal child with a squishy brain.
I was like, is Tea Time about to happen? So, but this is why I love the episode so much. So what was it about the script that attracted you guys to it?
Oh, I mean, the kind of gothic horror elements
Right off the bat, as soon as we read the script, it was like that those gothic horror images were coming to mind. And like, we love those classic, those classic movies and those classic books.
Drop some names.
Yeah. Let us know, like, what are the biggest inspirations of that gothic horror in this episode? Tell us.
You know, stuff like Dracula. And when we were scouting our wonderful location, people were looking for houses for us. Like, we knew that we wanted those almost like castle elements to kind of have that throwback to where the genre really started, in those like this classic Victorian tales, like the Edgar Allan Poe's, and a place where we'd have this kind of this character who's like, you know, trapped in the castle on the hill. And so they were wonderful, and they found that wonderful stonework and those chandeliers and everything that really kind of helped us just kind of like fit, sink into that world.
Chandeliers are like inherently, you can't trust someone who has a chandelier. I'm sorry. Like, don't trust a chandelier.
Like, I have extra suspended crystal. Don't worry, it's fine.
I think that there is something though about like being, you know, you're trapped in this scary house with these evil things. And yeah, so like, I mean, like our character of Sam, we in those classic gothic horrors, often, you know, we'll have our hero come into a place and they'll be trapped in a place where they have to face their fears and almost, you know, like be potentially tempted to the dark side. Yeah. And they have to, you know, sometimes they are tempted to the dark side and things don't end out well. And with this one, luckily our hero escapes and she she resists the temptation to become kind of evil or become like our child character who is just manipulative and awful.
So we really want to dig into your work this season. What were you trying to get across in Tea Time?
Mm-hmm. Well, Tea Time, what was really important to us was the heart of it with the character Sam and her struggling with how to be a leader and having this idea that to be a leader, you have to own this sense of power. Mm. And she's, you know, when she's looking at the magazine, all of the people that she looks at who are in positions of power are presented like these strong, kind of like forceful, right. Sort of like there, it's like there's sort of this aggression that's attached to this idea of being a leader that you have to kind of, yeah, be more powerful or, you know, put the other people down to a lower place so that you can hold on to that power, which is what we see our young character of this child do. She's really taken on those kinds of like, you know, I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be mean to my babysitters. I'm going to be mean to these dolls. I'm going to make them afraid of me so that they work for me. And we see that kind of behavior in a lot of people in power, but I think that there's this shift now towards like looking at like what is a leader and what are those good leadership qualities that that you can take forward and what does a different kind of leader look like. And so with Sam finding strength in herself of being a compassionate mm-hmm. leader,
right.
Like, and strength and compassion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Sam or Kaylee, if you'd rather jump in, but got us through your first day of shooting. Were there any initial challenges that you had that came across in production and how were you able to solve them? For example, dolls. That seems hard.
Oh yeah. That was the big challenge of the episode for sure. Yeah.
How did you make an inanimate doll-like object scary and terrifying and move and on camera?
Yeah. Props Master Andre did a fantastic job pulling together all those dolls.
Mm-hmm. Different shows have, you know, different limitations and stuff. And with this one, our dolls, because we didn't have ones that would actually physically move, right. Then it was about trying to figure out a way to film them and kind of give the illusion of movement a lot more times. So it was a fun challenge.
There are a lot of challenges that you do when you do like a horror thing and y'all conquered it so well. So I would really like to know what your favorite scenes were that you shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there was so, again, like this one was super fun and our cast were just super lovely to work with. And so like, it was so fun to do those scenes with, Christina and Sophia, like the witchy moment
stuff is when,
oh yeah,
I Sophia
like,
just like yes. getting into it.
Oh
yeah, so much yeah. fun. All of the incantations.
Yeah, when she's turning, when she's starting to turn, the character of Sam into a doll and she's, doing her little incantations.
Yeah.
So like, we've talked about the dolls, and like the decision to like, make the dolls actual people and like make them like, I don't have to fight you. Like you're a victim and I want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. So the way that you did a lot of that was actually using like the point of view of the dolls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose to make that decision?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we did want to find that way to feel connected to these dolls and feel like we were part of them, like watching the character of Sam, you know, in the halls and everything. But it was also, again, a way to kind of communicate that movement of the dolls. When we see them rushing, then we get the sense that the doll's moving. But then it's also like we are a huge fan of like when there's monsters and creepy things, the less that you see of them, we find that is the most scary. And so being able to use that where it's like where we can, you know, feel their POV and feel that movement, but without actually all the time like seeing the doll itself, we find that freaky.
Yeah, what you don't see is often freakier. Yeah. As soon as we see a doll walking across the floor, the fear level go down.
You're like, just kick it.
What are you doing?
Punch it across the room.
It's like when you don't know how it's going to move.
That is one of the challenges, to be like, how do we make them creepy and not just like, oh, you're like an action figure that I can crush with my foot.
Yeah. Having that like unknowing of like, how do they move? How quickly do they move? And having that, the fear of the unknown.
Yeah. It's like they're there, then they're gone. And when the lights go off, then they can move, but you don't know like how exactly, you know, they were able to move across the room. You know, like the idea of being stuck in a room with like, even just like, it could be with anything really, where it's like, if you turn off the light and you turn it back on and your like lamp has all of a sudden moved closer to you. Nope. It's just, you know,
absolutely not.
And then you're just like, and every time you look away, then it's like closer. And so you like can't look away. That concept is just like, was so freaky for us. And so we really wanted to play with that.
I love that. My fiance tried to punk me like this one time. He's a comedy guy. He's not into horror. He's very the most grounded person you'll ever met. And we were staying at some Airbnb again with a weird doll. And I like went to the bathroom, came back, and he goes, "Look over there. Do you think that doll looks different?" And I was like, "You did it." I was like, "You did it," because here in real life, here's how it would go down. The doll would move, and I'd be trying to convince you that it really happened. You would never like point it out. And he was like, "You're right, it was me." So was there a particular doll in the episode that you found the creepiest? What I loved about these too is they gave me kind of Cenobite vibes. Like I felt like Hellraiser vibes from just like the pins and like, you know,
everything. Yeah, it was all of Angela's, the kid character's like torture that you could just see. Yeah, everything on it. Yeah, and Andre was wonderful. He created like different stories for all of the dolls. There's a lot of dolls.
They all have
names and backgrounds, and like, and then the kind of torture that like that Angela was doing to each of these dolls. So it was like, this one, you know, got the pins put in because you know, they jumped off the shelf, and it's just
that's so sick.
The detail on that was really wonderful when you start looking closely at it. But the freakiest one out of all of them. There's a lot of freaky ones, but I think the one that comes out of the closet that has she had like sewed heads together.
Oh yeah,
that Angela had done.
Oh yeah,
and I think I think also because like that was the biggest one.
Oh,
So it was like it was definitely one that you didn't want, you know, running at you.
So I do not like creepy dolls. It's not my, and it's literally because. Not because it's like, I don't like that trope. It's because it's like, that works too effectively on me. Chucky, we were talking about this earlier, like with Child's Play, like I would have to run out of the room when a commercial came on. I did a set visit for one of the Annabelles, and they were like, take a picture with Annabelle. And I was like, no, thank you. And they were like, no, take a picture. And I was like, fine. And the picture's literally me being like,
I know, this is a creepy looking doll.
Yeah. Well, I think just dolls in general are creepy because there's that lifelike but not lifelike.
Yes. Uncanny valley.
The human brain to like wrap their head around. It's like you look like you should be alive, but you're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like giving me Sid from Toy Story. It's very much giving me all these things. And so like it's the way that y'all do it is it's like, yeah, they're like creepy dolls, but they're also like victims. And it's like really sad because they were people and suddenly like they don't have autonomy anymore. They're just like these dolls for someone to get to play with. And Sam is like a skosh totes close to like being a doll. Winds up, sorry, spoilers, whatever, overcoming Angela. And then helps all the other dolls like get their power back, like get their autonomy back, like be people. That scene where it's like the idea, and it's like, this is who you are. You are a person. You were a person. That really stuck with me a bunch. What do you think both of you think this episode is saying about like power dynamics and what real power looks like?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that idea that, well, that Angela thinks that power is taking control over people. And that elevates her. And that's how she thinks that she's better, is by controlling others.
Mm-hmm. And she is like, and she's controlling her babysitters, these dolls, the people around her, using fear and aggression.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so much so that, it's that thing that's like they've turned into something that they don't even recognize anymore. And we see that, you know, out in the world when somebody's underneath, you know, a certain kind of leader that's pushing you to behave in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And you almost forget your own values and your own sense of kind of how you want to do things because you're just so scared. Of this person above you. So you end up doing things that you wouldn't want to do. So like these dolls, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're attacking our character Sam, and they're doing Angela's bidding, and it's because they're afraid of her. Mm-hmm. And so when they're shown compassion and different kind of leadership and they're able to start to remember kind of who they are and how they want to behave, that was a message mm-hmm. that we loved, and they were happy it was there.
Yeah.
Like you almost have to be more compassionate than the rest, because I think that the more that you can give that to people, the more they'll be reminded to act in a similar way. And then there's a trickle down, right? Yeah.
And also, if you're rich and weird, don't let your child turn people into dolls.
Yeah, also that.
Maybe don't give her witchcraft lessons. Maybe just say,
yeah.
No, on the witchcraft, you're already wealthy, so. Speaking of the evil child part, let's turn our attention towards the fabulous Sophia Reed Gansert's performance as Angela in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Great.
She went girlfriend went all out. I was like,
she loved it too. She was having so much fun with it,
which we loved to see that she was so into it. And
well, from the moment we saw her audition, it was like we didn't even watch the whole thing. We're like, book her.
Yeah. She was already just so so good with that manipulation and finding those kind
of stairs and
so but there's also a fabulously campy little element of a British girl trying to turn you into a doll at tea time. So how did you navigate, like, how did you strike that balance between like a little bit campy, a little bit horror, and Sophia's natural murderous instincts?
We definitely embraced the like drama and the fun with it.
Yeah, like you said, it has that kind of that campy, that edge where it's like we wanted to find this fun, the play in it as well. Mm-hmm. That it is dark and it is kind of, you know, thrillery, but then it's dolls, it's moving dolls, and you know, a witchy kid, and we wanted that element of fun to it as well.
Even down to like her wardrobe, choosing something that has that kind of like iconic look for Angela.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
with the little puff sleeves and little bow.
So good.
So we'd love to know, clearly we're fans, what other projects you're currently working on, or what's coming up for the Spears sisters?
I mean, we're not kind of like ready to go on it yet, but we have one of our dream passion projects is actually a Hamlet adaptation that we've been wanting to do for years. And so,
years and years.
It's always there. Using the classic Shakespearean dialogue, but it's with a young female Hamlet.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be really fun. Get very ghost thriller vibes, but with, you know, the energy of youth.
Yeah.
that's tight.
That's one that's always going to be on our list until we make it. Yeah.
That's so dope. And we can't wait to watch all of these things. So we cannot thank you enough. Sam and Kaylee murdered it. That's like a weird, I know. I didn't mean to, but I did, but I didn't. But literally, we cannot thank you enough for coming on and chatting with us. This was amazing. Y'all are so creative and so much fun. And we are literally like, we cannot wait to see what you do next.
Yes, we love your disturbingly empathetic vision.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's lovely to meet you. Mm-hmm.
Danielle, I'm high-key obsessed with the Spear Sisters. They were so cool and so intentional with their filmmaking, right? Like, it was so neat to hear how they had horror references and they're like thinking about the message that their episode's sending. Just the complete package, in my opinion.
I don't know. I'm always a sucker for twins that work together. I'm like, I know that's not how we like categorize them.
I know. I'm straight up trying not to fetishize their cute twinness, but.
But also the way that they work together, the fact that they work together so well, and the way that they are able to really channel their message into horror. Like, that's what I love about genre. Like, that's what genre should be. And they made me like a doll thing. I hate doll things. It's too creepy. But this was like so redemptive, where it was like, yeah, like it's not just a creepy doll. Like, people get their agency back. Like, it,
In my opinion, it made it more horrific that the dolls were the spirits of tortured people trapped forever, unable to die. Like, their like empathy was actually way, I was like, oh, I wish they were just evil dolls. That's terrible. What's it like to be trapped for eternity? Back. They did. They did. So do they grow up big with pins in their heads? I want to see that sequel.
Oh, no. I hope not. Oh, no.
Well, that was so much fun. And coming up, we're joined by drag performer, filmmaker, and horror fan, the iconic Peaches Christ.
Yo. Can't wait. Joining us now is drag performer, Peaches Christ.
Peaches is a filmmaker, actor, and cult leader living in San Francisco. Her infamous cult movie events are self-produced at the Castro Theater and have featured special guest stars like John Waters, Cloris Leachman, and the legendary Pam Grier.
Peaches is the writer and director of the feature film All About Evil. The award-winning dark comedy gore film stars Natasha Lyonne, Thomas Dekker, Cassandra Peterson, Mink Stole, and Peaches Christ herself.
Peaches Christ has appeared in such films as Milk, Diary of a Teenage Girl, and has appeared on HBO's Looking. She also has a podcast, Midnight Mass, which is a must listen.
Next up, Peaches Christ. Peaches, we are so thrilled to have you. Sorry, I'm fangirling a little bit, but thank you so much for coming and welcome to the show.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Okay, so before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to be known as Peaches Christ? And this is just my personal curiosity. Does it have anything to do with the Teaches of Peaches?
Okay, so actually, that's funny. It's that, believe it or not, that's the first time I've been asked that as far as the Teaches of Peaches part. So I'll go back. And that's... That's partly because I've been around for so long. So Peaches Christ was born in the mid-90s when I was at film school at Penn State. And I grew up a very damaged Catholic kid who loved horror movies and anything weird. And so, so when I discovered, you know, drag through the cult films of John Waters and the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, for me, you know, drag was synonymous with being punk rock and cult movie and horror. And so I wanted to take a drag moniker that would piss off religious people. and also, you know, celebrate my own, you know, being raised Catholic. You know, for me, it was a reclaiming, you know, using this thing that had been used kind of, you know, in a way to hurt me or strike fear in me. It was like a way to sort of take it back. And so that's when I became Peaches. And honestly, it was a hobby. It was a punk rock kind of hobby in the mid 90s doing drag. And never did I imagine it would become a career. And, you know, here I am years later still doing it.
That's incredible. As also somebody raised Catholic, my mother would say, who made you like this? Why do you like horror so much? Who did this to you? And I said, you raised me Catholic.
Yeah.
It's about a guy who is brutally murdered and then comes back to life. Like, that is a horror story.
Jesus is literally a zombie.
He's literally a zombie.
It's literally that thing where it's like, who did this to you? And it's like, you did, Dad. I learned it from you. Yeah. I learned it from watching you.
And speaking of drag, speaking of Catholic horror and your podcast, Midnight Mass, which also shares a title with the that Netflix series that came out recently, Midnight Mass, which was such good Catholic horror to me that I wanted to tell my mom to watch it because they got all the references. But then I was like, but it's ultimately a perversion of everything she believes in. So probably not. But I love your podcast. I want to join the cult. Give me a glass of Kool-Aid. I most recently listened to your episode with Doug Bradley from Hellraiser, which was so cool. He's so iconic. So tell us a little bit about how the Cult of the Midnight Mass came about.
So Midnight Mass actually started as a stage show back in 1998. So
I watched it a bunch in San Francisco. I'm sorry.
Oh, you did? Okay, that's amazing.
So, I'm a stand-up, so I've like been to San Francisco, and this was one of the things where I was like, I got it.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah, because that's really like for me, especially folks that came to the original Midnight Mass shows back when we did them at midnight and they were at an old movie theater. And, you know, basically me doing a drag show before screenings of things like Faster Pussycat Kill Kill or, you know, horror movies or anything cult, really. And we did them at midnight and they were wild and outrageous. And so I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but we screened Showgirls in 1998. Okay. It came out in, 96. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to book it as a midnight movie, the distributors and the film booker for Landmark Theaters were like, you want to book what? What? Why? You know, that movie tanked. And then they booked a different movie that had come out the same year called Striptease, starring Demi Moore. And I had to explain to them, no, I don't want that movie. I want Showgirls, the movie, you know, the Paul Verhoeven movie. And then from 1998, for the next 20 years, I screened that movie annually for and grew this cult here in San Francisco that then grew out into the world, you know? Mm-hmm. And I offered free lap dances with every large popcorn every single year, you know, and I burst out of a volcano. That's how the show always opened, was with me bursting out of a volcano and dancing with dancers. And we definitely were instrumental in making that a cult movie.
So that's so great that you share those references. And I'm really interested in your take on this, old school horror and camp. Mm-hmm. So why do you think they're such like bedfellows, right? Because I love scary horror and fun horror. And my definition of fun is, I was like, let's watch a fun movie. And my fiance goes, define fun. I was like, okay, well, everybody gets murdered really fast and you see it. Like, okay, that's not. So why do you think they're such good bedfellows, you know?
I honestly think because they both have to do with release. And maybe maybe there's even a sexual component to all of this. But I think that laughter and screaming is healing. Mm. And I think that when, like, I have a big immersive theater project here in San Francisco that's a huge hour-long haunted attraction that, you know, has a story to it, right? And it's campy and it's scary. And I get to watch as people go through this thing and they scream scream, you know, and then they laugh, right? And then and the two, I think, go hand in hand. And I think if we actually, most of us who love horror movies actually don't want to live in trauma or fear. Mm-hmm. And so the horror movie actually is this sort of safe place for escape, to exercise fears, to sort of push our limits. And to me, comedy is very similar. And in some ways, I think humorless horror isn't something I connect with very much. Like almost every great horror movie that I love, you know, I would argue has a sense of humor. There's a few that
I gotta jump in because I so agree with you. Yeah. Like my favorite kind of horror is when there's a human element, which is laughter, right? Like I do sometimes like the, you know, dreary indie horror where everybody talks like this and no matter how happy they are there, it's always kind of a monotone and but in my life, usually the most horrific moments are right up against some hilariously awful shit.
Freddie is my dude. Freddie is my dude.
But even like if you laugh, then you care about the people. Yes. And so then when they die, there's stakes, right? You can only be as sad as you are funny or happy, right? There's a bigger drop. So I love that that is the, that you see that connection for us. Anyway.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't, you know, realize like I'm using that term in a very broad way, you know, like, you know, Jack Nicholson's performance in The Shining is camp. Like, you know, people forget, like, and it's also a hardcore, scary, terrifying, effective horror movie. It can be both, you know, and a lot of times people don't realize like, oh, Silence of the Lambs, maybe one of the best horror movies ever made. Also one of the campiest, most outrageous films ever made, you know.
So we're talking about the episode Teen Time. There are camp elements of it.
Yes.
So we want to get your ideas about that. Like, we have to know, would you rather have evil doll or evil children?
Okay. I guess what I mean is, would I rather have them in a movie or rather be stuck
one
in
or
a
the
room
other?
With one?
Like, if you have to, okay. If you have to fight one
your
of them.
Your preferred nemesis.
Yeah. Child, doll, go.
I think a doll. I think I could deal with a doll better. Of course, this episode that we're going to talk about is both, right? So that was what was so interesting about it. But you know, I think that I could deal better with a doll, maybe.
I'm the only one on Team Kill a Kid because they're moral.
I don't enjoy either.
Dolls are too small.
I hate both of them. They're both terrible. How do you feel, Beaches?
I think there's something. Well, of course, I'm coming at it from the writer producer point of view, where I'm like, there's something still so taboo about an evil child that like that idea of the image, like beating up a doll, the image of that, the sort of the battle there, I think, you know, is easier for me to swallow. Whereas an adult hurting, or like, I don't know, Pet Sematary, for example, you know, like that was so shocking to me, you know, that little, I mean, because that kid was little. You know, and he's there with a scalpel, you know, messing up people's ankles. And, you know, it's like I wouldn't want to deal with that because I just don't know if I could hurt a kid, even if they were evil.
Thank you. I can't drop kick a child.
Yeah.
If I gave birth to Rosemary's Baby, I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's a demon baby. Let's go.
Also, Peaches, you just don't look behind you, but there's an evil kid behind you right now.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
So what was your initial reaction while watching this episode, Tea Time?
I think what I love about anthology series is that you can sort of push the, you know, the sort of comic book feel of it. You know, you can do these sort of broader strokes and it in some ways I think it serves the story because we don't have time to get too deep, right? So I really liked the introduction of the parents. And of course, the discussion here is going to have some spoilers, right? Like,
we're spoiler happy.
Okay, so, you know, the fact that the mother was wearing sunglasses was like really annoying to me, right? But I love the payoff at the end, right? You know, but I like that it was camp. It was in your face. It was like, you know, of course, our protagonist is the most normal person entering this bizarro world. Yeah, I really, my first impressions were really good.
Okay, so let's keep talking about these creepy parents because there are a lot of questions. Like, do you think, I mean, obviously, they suck. They're not good people. But do you think that they knew what was going on with the creepy dolls? Or were they also victims of their very creepy child?
I think both. I think they
things
I think
are allowed
they knew.
To be two things at once.
Yeah, I think they knew what was going on. And my sense was that she is controlling them. And they were even worried about, did they come home too early, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because, you know, was she going to be pissed off at them? So it feels like she's like this little devil child, you know, who's controlling her parents.
Yeah.
And they're also kind of assisting her in terms of building this doll army or whatever it is she's doing.
Well, that's why I thought about your Hellraiser Midnight Mass episode, because again, the Cenobite vibe of the dolls.
Yes.
I was like, this is so great. That's what my doll collection looked a little bit like as a girl.
Also, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, obviously, some of it was messed up, but at least one of them kind of looked like a pierced brat doll, and I was like, hey, girl, you look cute.
They were
very
cute
doll.
She right? definitely had that. You're exactly right. There was a Cenobite edge to the design that she was working with, and some of them I thought, yes, they were all pretty creepy, but they were also very cool. You know, whoever the art department person was that did the dolls, or whoever created those, I think did an excellent job. And certainly that's where the scare factor was. Except that I'll also say that I was impressed with the idea of a modern house like that being so effectively haunted and scary feeling, right? Like I thought they did such a good job of using a modern location, but still making it cold and scary.
Ugh, I totally agree. So let's talk about Sam, our horror girl protagonist, the babysitter. And both Angela, evil kid, and Angela's parents mock her for having a goal in life, which is really thanks for that. So what do you think this episode is trying to tell us about class structures in a capitalist society? However much she was paid was not worth the doll eye, I would say.
right. No, not at all.
Right?
It's pretty clear that, the little girl tells her, you're not cut out for business. And in some ways you go, oh my God, that's so rude, right? But then there's this other flip side to it, which is actually what she's saying is true. Like, if you're empathic, if you're a good person, if you have humanity, you won't succeed in an American business model anymore, because our capitalist, country is now driven by greed and you know, not being human, being just a horrible, horrible person. And those people that rise to the top, the people that are the most successful are like sociopaths, you know? So,
yeah.
I thought that was interesting that they just came right out and said it.
So how would you have gotten... Talk us through, horror movie style, what you would have done in Sam's situation to get out of the house.
So I guess maybe what I would try to do is figure out what she was doing, and then maybe try to help the other babysitters. You know, that would be, my fantasy would be that I could be some sort of Norma Rae for the dolls.
A babysitter's club with a silkworm shower.
Yes.
Lead us to freedom, Peaches Christ.
Exactly.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. I can't believe we got you on. This is so dope. Please tell everyone where they can find you online because they need to and they should.
Yes. peacheschrist.com is my website. And then I'm verified on all the different social media places, and check out the Midnight Mass podcast. And thank you for having me here.
Thank you for coming and joining us, Peaches. Look for that blue check mark from Peaches Christ across social media and listen to their fabulous podcast. Thank you so much. Danielle, that was such a fun conversation with the Spear Sisters and Peaches Christ.
Everyone was like, the Spear Sisters are like so smart and insightful, and I can't wait to hear about everything they have to say. Peaches Christ is just a delight. This was just
iconic.
Iconic.
We were saying at the end of the conversation, probably you guys won't hear it, but we kept talking over each other because Danielle and I are both so excited to get our questions in front of Peaches freaking Christ.
Yeah, like, literally, so, like both Peaches and the Spear Sisters were both like, they'll probably cut it, but it's both of us like, can I talk? Do you talk? Can I talk?
We're like, we have to tell you how much we love you. Like, sorry, we need to get that out there. That's more important than anything you're about to say. But
it's so great.
Still, they said a lot of really smart, interesting, cool things. So thank you, the Spear Sisters, as well as Peaches Christ, for letting us geek out about our favorite subgenres of horror, evil doll, evil child. I'll kill a kid.
Not my favorite. Hate it. Very creepy. But thank you so much for joining us. This is Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast. Catch you next time. Thank you for listening to Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast is a Stage 13 original series hosted by me, Danielle Radford.
And me, Megan Rosati. Don't forget to watch Season 3 of Two Sentence Horror Stories on the CW and CWTV.com and stream Seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix.
Check out more on the show at Stage13.com and be sure to follow Two Sentence Horror Stories on Instagram at Two Sentence Horror Stories for the latest updates on the podcast and show, and on our Facebook page at Two Sentence Horror Stories to connect with other fans of the show and share your thoughts on this season.